So Chris was talking during the break about when you get a surprise like this, when people start paying attention en masse to an underdog like the Miami Heat, what you get in these moments as you go deeper and deeper into the playoffs is reputation enhancement. Like Dan Dockich has gone from arguing with Jorge Sedano about Spo not being any good to now arguing that Spo's the only guy in the sport who knows what he's doing. And this is happening for a lot of Heat players. Jimmy Butler, reputation enhancement, Bam Adebayo, Goran Dragic, Jay Crowder. But before we go down that path, though, I wanted to ask you guys something, because we are not the show that believes in these great intangibles or momentum or all these storyline mythologies as being the reason for why it is a team wins. But I want to ask you guys,
for yourself.
I want to ask you guys this question as we head down this path and you watch the Miami Heat against the Celtics. Help me with this, because this is something that I wonder whether or not it's going on with you as you view this. Do you think to yourself, as the Boston Celtics big star cocks back to make a dunk, and at the end of the game, as he's looking for his moment, Bam Adebayo takes it from him. And then last night, okay, you're winning 94-91. You're a little bit scared, but you got that cushion fans like, even if it's 3 points of, we cannot lose on whatever it is that happens next. We've got a 3-point cushion for my fear.
Unless Derrick Jones Jr. is out there, then he's definitely fouling a 3-point shooter.
But you know you're not going to be trailing at the end of this possession. You know how sports fans do this, okay? Especially in this sport, 3 points means next to nothing, but you're up 94-91 while you're down in the series, okay? I'm juxtaposing these two things as matters of will, as matters of toughness, the stuff that Stan Van Gundy says when he says the Miami Heat are tougher than the Boston Celtics. So you're the Boston Celtics. You're down one, but you're not only down one. You're down one with your star being denied at the rim at the end of the game in a way that makes you're down one in the series, is what I mean.
You're down 1-0.
Makes your guy be your best player is on his back, base of the basket. Bam Adebayo is holding the ball. Everyone is marveling and laughing and echoing. No one can complain. Clean block. That's how you're down. But you're winning this game, 94-91. And then their star, Chris was making the argument that Jimmy Butler might be the third biggest remaining star. The Lakers have two of them, but among the guys that are remaining in terms of stardom, not best player necessarily, not Jokic, not Tatum, but star.
It should be Jokic, but no one wants him around.
I believe the Lakers have the only two superstars remaining in the postseason. But if you're making the argument on behalf of Jimmy Butler, you're up three, and not only does he, on the perimeter, extend himself in a way that has the ball going out of bounds, but then saves the ball by throwing it behind his back. It goes instead of to, because it's just a panic situation. He doesn't know where he's throwing the ball.
He's just trying to save it, yeah.
He's just trying to save it, and Kemba Walker is there, but he throws it too hard with his left hand around his back.
Yep.
Like, around his back, that it goes to the other side of the court to Tyler Herro, who then sees that he's wide open, going from out of bounds back toward the basket, and now all of a sudden, you're up only one, and now all of a sudden you're scared, and now all of a sudden you've lost the game, and now all of a sudden everyone's calling the Boston radio station to complain about Jason Tatum's elbows. And I'm asking you, if you're the basketball team that is young in that situation, how much amnesia do you have for, like, man, this is twice we've gone into the fire with these dudes, and they pull out of their ass some plays that we haven't seen before.
And then you have Marcus Smart yelling at his own teammates towards the end of that game and after that game. There were reports in the locker room that he was yelling. Brad Stevens with the baby face in between the third and fourth quarter. I'd like to think neutral court. They're not coming back to Miami. They're just playing on a floor with Miami's logos on it. That a neutral floor, I'd like to think this team would be able to bounce back. I'm not certain it will, but I'd like to think they would be able
to. In all fairness to Marcus Smart, he was overheard screaming, they're on that bullshit, and we don't know who's on that bullshit. It could be the Heat. It could be the refs. It could be his own teammates. Enos Kanter came out and said there's a lot of rumors out there. None of it's true, blah, blah, blah.
No, but I want to. What I want to do is sink into all of that. As the sports show that, okay, Stugatz believes in some of this stuff, but as the sports
show.
Team
of destiny, the Heat right now.
Yeah, except that you just couched your opinion with they may come back, I don't know, was your take on what it is that I just said. When I'm trying to sink into the emotion of what it is that's happening with both Heat fans and Celtics fans, because if you believe in that stuff, then those things are demoralizing. If you believe in that stuff, then the locker room problems become real instead of this silly thing. I think anyone who's down 0-2 is going to be super frustrated. I think anyone who's down 0-2 with the losses that way is going to be super frustrated. I don't think it matters to professionals. I think professionals bounce back, and sometimes those shots go in, and that will not be something that plagues the Boston Celtics. But what I'm asking you guys is, as sports fans, are you feeling the strength and the weight of that, where it's not just, hey, we're beating you, but we're beating you with these plays that are super memorable and that we're going to take into the next game with confidence and enthusiasm because our team has won 10 of 11 games?
Honestly, less so without fans.
Yeah.
Because I remember, the bubble works several ways, not just protects you from this virus, but you're also living in the bubble. You're not driving home every night, maybe listening to what's going on in sports talk radio. I'm sure they have their social media, but I don't know if the criticism that they would get normally if they were home, I don't think they'd be wearing it the same way if they disappointed an arena full of fans twice as the higher seed.
Right. Plus, you lose the first two at home and you actually have to go to Miami. You know the series is over. Like, you know it's over. You're not coming back from 0-2 when you lost the first two games at home. So
I just don't know if they wear it as much. I certainly know what this would feel like if this were a normal circumstance. And it wouldn't feel like this, I don't think, if you're a Boston supporter or even a player on that team.
It's so interesting, the disconnect you guys are talking about there, because the two plays we're talking about, if they had been around fans in either a home arena or a road arena, would have felt like something else, because you would have felt inside of a building an energy either, you know, soar or an energy fall apart, because you get a little scared all of a sudden that you just saw against you and your team a play that, you know, might be remembered.
Imagine seeing that Bam play with fans in Boston. If that play happened in Boston and he shut up 20,000 Celtic fans in one second.
I remember the way the arena felt on the Tiago Splitter block when LeBron James met him at the rim. Like, you feel a certain thing when 20,000 people are seeing something and they all realize at the same time, wait a minute, did I see what I just saw?
Yeah, I feel like I'm more invested if they're fans, because just look, remember what the reaction was after Bam gets that block. He immediately throws a panic pass at Derrick Jones Jr. is there to catch. There's no gestures to the stands. There's no bubbling hatred for what this player did. If you're a player on that court, you can't help but turn to the fans because of all of the horrible things, especially in Boston, you're probably hearing. It, that little bit of aspect of it, that little bit of poison, I'm really missing that, especially when it's the Celtics and Heat.
Same here. It's not to minimize what the Heat are doing, because they're playing great. The games have been exciting. They're making all-time plays. They're making plays that Magic Johnson is calling the greatest block he's ever seen in NBA history. But, Dan, you know this town. Like, imagine this town if the Heat were coming back from Boston up 2-0 for a Saturday night Game 3 at the American Airlines Arena. You're missing that. You're just missing parts of what sports is all about.
Billy, I don't feel like we've done enough, okay? This is something that's weird that's happened in the last couple of days. Everybody is waving around this Magic Johnson tweet when we've only been making fun of that account for all of the history of time, and now all of a sudden we are reverential about Magic Johnson said that's the best defensive play he's ever seen in the playoffs.
I mean, the guy's seen a lot of playoff games.
I understand, but he's also the owner of the most mundane Twitter account in the history of Twitter accounts, where he only says the most obvious things. And now we're waving around this guy as the banner and the flag for all historic analysis. Hey, did you hear what Magic Johnson said? That play that I saw for myself that was an amazing block, he also thinks is amazing.
He's also probably seen the most amazing defensive play in the history of the playoffs. 30 times if we look back on Twitter. And I tried to look back on Twitter, by the way, and there was just so much reaction when I searched at Magic Johnson best defensive play, because everyone was like, whoa, Magic just said that that was the best defensive play I've ever seen, that bam, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, am I really going to dedicate like 2 hours of my life to find how many times Magic Johnson has done this? Because
I wish
what's the payoff in the end of this, right? Like 20 seconds of Magic Johnson in 2014 said that this was the best defensive play. And I was like, eh. Probably not worth 2 hours of searching.
But you have felt how weird this is, just like I have, right? I know you mentioned it earlier this week. The idea that all of a sudden everyone's reporting what Magic Johnson tweeted, when all we've been doing since Magic Johnson was on Twitter was make fun of everything that Magic Johnson is tweeting.
Ah, but that's sports. That's the fun of sports, Dan. If Magic Johnson says something that's good for you, you're like, yes, Magic Johnson, NBA legend, Hall of Famer. He knows, he had movie theaters, what the best defensive play is in the history of sports. But if he says something that you disagree, like, ah, it's Magic Johnson. He tweets crazy things all the time. Same thing like the asterisk thing that we were talking about, which, by the way, you guys were getting dangerously close to saying that this feels kind of different than the other regular playoffs do, which I'd it warn does. You against, because then people can read into you saying that this playoff is not the same and that it's a little different. And then we start getting into the asterisk talk. And I just caution you, stay away from that, because that's a very divisive issue that I don't know if you guys want to get into. And then maybe people will perceive you as saying that this championship doesn't count the same as 06 and the other one. So just be careful with that. But it's the same thing with that. You know, you take the asterisk talk if you want it to be good, and if you want it to be bad, you say, nah, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? You just pick and choose, Dan. That's what sports is. Journalism, that's what you do. You just pick and choose the facts that you want to say and the things that you journalism. Like, and then you present it the way that you like, and then boom, sports radio.
Yep.
On that conversation, I don't really know. There's no way of knowing if the Miami Heat would do this under normal circumstances.
What do you think, Mike?
I don't know. I really don't know.
Lose a single game.
They look like they're the best team in the East right now, and right. when they're 10-1 in the postseason, it's hard to argue. I really wish, though, like as a community, it kind of is bringing us together, but remotely. I had a friend over for game one, and I high-fived him when Bam Adebayo made that block, and it sounds stupid, but God, I miss that. I miss being in an arena full of people and just losing my mind. It's different at home by myself.
Did you wash your hands afterwards?
I did, man.
That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah.
I got very nervous last night when Troy Aikman reached over the glass and shook Joe Buck's hand when he got inducted into the Hall of Fame. I was like, whoa.
Skeptical
that
Billy.
That glass is there for a reason, buddy.
Skeptical Billy. Joe Buck tried to play it off like he was caught by surprise by that whole...
I think he was.
He was faking
really?
That.
Yeah.
Wow. Joe Buck's known for a decade. What are you talking about?
Yeah, narrated like, by
wow.
Paul Rudd.
He's like,
yeah.
Whoa. Thank you.
I'm stunned that I'm going into the Hall of Fame. Oh, wow, it was not a great, and I know Joe Buck is a talent, and he can act. It wasn't quite believable for me, but it was a nice touch having his friend Paul Rudd, who at the very end reminded you he's a lifelong friend, narrate that piece.
Buck's going to be at two Hall of Fames, huh?
Yeah.
Baseball Hall of Fame, football
Hall of Fame. It's crazy because he doesn't. We're going to age, and Joe Buck, we're going to see Joe Buck become an old man, and he's going to be one of these, like, it's going to be like Dick Stockton out there, where I've always remembered Dick Stockton
he's
as an old man.
He's still doing games. Stockton is still doing NFL games.
Yeah, doing them well, by the way. Have some respect. Have some respect.
Have some volume on your TV.
Have some respect. The voice of the NBA in the 80s and 90s.
Not exactly.
I do want to point out what it is that Mike pointed out, because I felt it. I felt a palpable sadness about what Mike is saying here in this respect, Stugatz, and you'll appreciate this as someone who loves my father. I miss when the Heat do something well, physically jostling my father. Like shaking his shoulders, just sort of disorienting him because he's an old man. He used to do this with both.
You shouldn't shake old people, Dan.
You shouldn't do
that. But he used to do this. This is something I saw since childhood, right? He would walk into my grandfather's house, and my grandfather had a twin brother that he was always with. And my father, when he was about my age, would get in front of my grandfather and my great uncle. And he would get in sort of a fighting pose. And because they were old men, they would sort of back off. And it's something I just saw. It's something that not even consciously I've learned from him. And so I like jostling my father when he is excited about something. And I haven't been able to do this with like this feeling with the Miami Heat. This is the most surprising Heat team of our lifetime. It really is. It's not, there's nothing like this in terms of basketball in this town with a surprise. And I miss the physicality of it's weird, but because it's not something that I've felt very much before in my life, the physicality of being able to share enthusiasm with my father.
It's that communal thing that is missing, I think, from all of this. It's like that time, remember, we were at the sports bar and you pumped your fist when Udonis Haslam hit that baseline jumper and we all jumped all over you and we were celebrating
together.
Has
that been confirmed?
Yeah. It was a dunk and you admitted to it.
Yeah.
I did it on the BAM block.
Yeah. Oh, our guest at 10:30.
Are you guys not connecting with your wives more? I feel like I'm just watching all these sporting events with my wife now. So, like, I feel like we're connecting more on it. More high fives with the wife.
It's hard when I'm laying like Steve Nash on the floor, honestly.
Yeah.
Couch.
Why didn't you buy a comfortable nursing chair?
I did.
I think the chair, that would be comfortable. Dan asked you if you were uncomfortable even in that.
I only have one nursing chair. I got it for Cynthia. She's a queen. Yeah, so she's.
Why don't you move your old couches until your new couch is gone?
I didn't want to move them with me because I wanted to upgrade the couches, and I really regret doing that. I wanted to leave them in the house because I knew from my own experience that furniture is on a super long delay. I keep getting emails saying my couches are coming later and later. So I thought it would be incentive. Hey, as is. And sure enough, it sold in like 4 hours. But man, do I regret leaving the furniture there as a part of the deal.
When he says he's laying like Steve Nash, don't you think of like Larry Bird is the person who spent the last two seasons just laying on the sidelines on his stomach with a bag of ice on his back, right?
Steve Nash.
Really? Steve Nash is on his back.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Propped up.
Maybe it's an age thing.
It probably is an age thing.
Yeah. I have one memory of Larry Bird playing it. He was like already an old man. He was on the dream team.
Yeah, I don't
team.
Remember any Larry Bird playing. Mm-hmm.
Jesus Christ, world.
Yeah, my memory of Larry Bird is just him using
when
the montage.
When did he retire? When did he retire?
I don't know. That'll make me sad right now.
92?
Yeah. And by then he was like toast. Everyone knew his back was shot.
Spent a good deal of time talking about Larry Bird on the show this week.
Wow, I pulled that out of my ass. He retired in 92.
Yeah.
I was flatly guessing.
I mean, I remember I watched Larry Bird's jersey retirement, the 33, filling that block. I have a very vivid memory of that. It's just my memories of Larry Bird as a player was mostly people talking about how great Larry Bird was and watching all these tapes. And because ESPN back in the 90s was amazing. They'd do these year retrospectives. I would know so much about like the 78 Celtics. I miss that. Man, that childhood was
As it relates to what it is that we're presently watching with the Miami Heat, is there another franchise that would be considered as – you know, with the poisonous feelings, with the hatred, like we're talking about Larry Bird, is the Pacers, is there anyone that you look at and you think of the same way you think of Boston, which is there's this extra layer with Boston. Boston does not like what Miami stands for in principle. The things that we've endured specifically from Boston, more than any other market in the United States, because we do this radio show this way, the things that we've endured are more hostile than they are anywhere else, any other city.
I mean, Boston's a city. It's a team thing, and then it grows into a city and fan thing. So it's different. With the Pacers, it was just the team. There was just certain guys on the team that you didn't really
there's
like.
There's nothing like this,
there's
Mike.
There's nothing about the city,
this is,
though.
Like, there's
well,
the no
Knicks,
other-
I'm never going to forget that Knicks series. But in terms of, like, hatred, I'm never going to forget what those big 3 years felt like. Boston, more than any other city, ties up its identity with its sports. And it got really ugly when this feels different because everything is different. And I don't think they have the same hatred. They certainly don't have the same hatred for this Miami Heat core. But I'm never going to forget what my mentions were when the Heat were going through their run. I'm never going to forget all of Rondo's BS and how much I dislike that team. And it still gurgles up within me whenever I see Paul Pierce's face. God, that guy sucks.
But no other team gives you that. I mean, the Spurs, they played each other in the finals 2 years in a row. Mutual respect.
Yeah,
right.
The Pistons of Chauncey, Rip, Ben Wallace, and Rasheed. I think everybody was annoyed by that team. The Miami Heat were no different, and that was a very painful elimination in 2005, which prior to this run was the best run in Miami Heat postseason history, and then Dwayne hurt his rib. I thought for sure that team was going to win the title. I hated that team a lot, and the Pacers. But the Pacers were never, talent-wise, on Miami's level. They were just annoying and would get under your skin. It would be very confusing. Like, why is Miami letting Roy Hibbert do this?
Billy, Chris, do you feel any of this stuff as it relates to city rivalries? Because you've got the rare combination of all of it, right? The teams have butted heads. The cities are very different stylistically. Do you guys feel any of what Mike is talking about there, where you might be moved to just listen? Basically, what Mike Ryan did last night is the game was over. He's got another game to move to. He's got more action to move to, but he wanted to go for a swim in the tears of Boston Celtics fans. He wanted, in the middle of the night, in an uncomfortable chair, in his fat shirt, to just wallow within, just soak in all of the tears. Yeah, you say it's weird, but that's where it's coming from.
I say it's weird. I've done it before, though.
But I don't think...
it's coming from my 20s.
I don't think any other team is making you do that. Search out an opposing radio station?
Yeah, certainly not in the East. Any team LeBron is on, that's going to, if it is indeed LeBron versus the Heat in the finals, I've sort of like let that go, right? All that resentment. He won one in Cleveland, changed the math, and now the Miami Heat are fine, and the blood clots, I've forgotten about it, but it's going to gurgle back inside me. I'm going to want to hand LeBron that L. It would be very embarrassing for him, and I think Team Petty is going to come back out if that is indeed the matchup.
If the Heat play the Lakers, who do you think Heat fans want to see lose the championship more? LeBron James or Dion Waiters? Because I feel like if this season ends with Dion Waiters winning a championship over the Heat, people will lose their minds.
There's a lot of people. I want to see Vogel. I don't like Vogel because of the Pacers days. Rondo, don't forget, Rondo is on that team. There is a lot of incentive outside of just lifting Larry O'Brien.
The thing I relate to Mike with the most on that is the fat shirt. I definitely have a fat shirt. We all have a fat shirt, right? A shirt that you just feel safe in, you feel good in, a little slender.
A little slender. I don't have one of those.
No, it's just I already have like the overlap a little bit because of how low so I'm picking up the waistband a little bit because I don't need to feel that when I'm just trying to kick back and watch a game. And now I'm wearing this shirt from like an in-arena giveaway shirt that is way too tight around the top than I ever remember.
That's the dryer. Don't blame that on yourself, man. That's the dryer.
I mean, this one hadn't been washed all that much. I specifically was holding this one back, and it's just this. Wait a second. This is an in-arena giveaway shirt. This is everyone's supposed to be to feel comfortable in these, and I don't. So I had to change to the fat shirt once it became brown time.
I feel like those Heat giveaway shirts shrink more than any other. Like I have six.
Heat culture shirt has shrunk. You see my stomach when I wear it.
I know I'm fat. Don't make the joke here, Chris. It's not the shirt. But I'm telling you, these shirts shrink so it must be the material that they use because they have to make a bunch of them. I would use a cheap cotton too.
Yeah.
But it is just, it's insane how small, like multiple 06 conference final shirts.
Maybe you just got bigger, Chris. Yeah,
thank you for making me feel better. It's definitely the shirt. It's not.
It's a combination. I'm telling
14
you.
Years ago, I think your body's
I'm
changed.
I'm telling you, these shirts shrink. I'm not saying I haven't grown, but they do. I'm
sold. It's the shirt.
What is really insane, I think something that doesn't get enough coverage and should be talked about more, is just how unreasonably excited people get to receive one of these incredibly cheap shirts. It's like finding
it's like finding
a nickel on your seat of your at the arena.
No, it's like finding a 20 in your pocket, your pant pocket.
Dude legitimately almost pushed me down the stairs at the AAA when I was a season ticket holder because I caught him stealing the shirt that was on the back of my chair.
That was probably me.
Like I've seen fights at the t-shirt cannon.
Yeah, no? I'm like, hey man, hey, that's my shirt. And I try to like, and he was like, no, it's mine. I'm like, it was on the back. I try to take it out of his hands and he shoved me. I'm like, okay, this is not worth it. This is ridiculous.
Don't you have to take inventory of your entire life when you're fighting one of these 7 cent t-shirts?
100%. But it's worth the fights.
It's the last altercation I've ever been in my entire life. I'm like, this is stupid.
This actually reminds me of last night on the internet, on Twitter, there was a fight at the Browns-Bengals game between fans, which is not safe in a pandemic. And everybody on Twitter started taking it super seriously. And I was like, you know what? If there can't be a fight at a football game, we need to just not have fans. Because when you have a football game and you have fans, you have fights. Okay, that's not on the fans. Okay, they're expected to fight at football games. If you're going to have football games with fans, we allow fights. If we don't want fights, no fans.
And Browns probably top five in the nation in terms of fan bases that fight themselves. Number one, Miami Hurricanes. We all know this, especially that upper deck.
Fan bases ridiculous.
Yeah, Flyers fans are in that top five. Sixers fans and Bruins fans. I've seen so many Bruins on Bruins fights.
You
it's just crazy. Come.
You basically are coming to the arena with a lifetime of resentment, and someone is going to feel them at the end of your fist.
Speaking of the football game last night, one of the great backdoor covers of all time. I mean, no one, a backdoor cover on a 16 play 70 yard drive.
I hated that. How the hell do the Bengals run 30 more plays?
I don't know. Backdoor cover.
Do you guys agree with me though? Like about the fights?
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
Like they shouldn't have fans at football games if that's going to turn into a big societal point of like, look at this. See, it's like they're drunk at a football game. They're allowed to fight. We shouldn't have fans then if they can't fight.
It's why I don't even know why they're allowing fans at Hard Rock Stadium here, because they're not allowing alcohol sales, and all the problems at Hard Rock Stadium trace back to the alcohol that they sell in there. So they're limiting the fights, and they're limiting, there's no tailgating either, because you can drink at your car, so we don't want you coming in there boozed up. Nobody wants to go anymore. The capacity was 13,000 and 4,000 people showed up for the last game I was there.
Chris, did you see, you say, and I understand your point, and I want to ride with your point, your irresponsible point of if it's football and fans, you must allow fights.
License to fight.
Understood. I want to follow you there and just be that kind of irresponsible and not wag a finger parentally admonishing you. But did you see what the Kansas City Chiefs had to release as a statement because one of their fans tested positive for coronavirus? They then have to go through the George Orwell. We've been videotaping this person. We followed all of his movements. We saw who he came into interaction with. We talked to the people who were there, who came into interaction with this fan.
It was a bizarre flex via a PR release because they were really touting their contact tracing when they should have said, whoops.
Does that mean that like some random fan got an email after that game like, hey, by the way, when you were at the urinal in the third quarter, you were right next to the guy? It's like, oh, God, what a terrible thing to say to me.
That's right. Now, imagine that person was in the fight. Now, imagine that's the reason you got all that societal discourse on your Twitter feed. And that's why I can't follow you where you're going.
It just made me so sad. Sarah Spain, like wagging a finger. It's like, it's a football fight. It's a football game. Like, Sarah, this is what we do.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's really carved out a niche for herself in Will's absence.
I'm looking up hazmat suits so Dan could go see Bobby and shake him.
I think you always got to go with hazmat suits. You always got to go up a size.
Right?
Yeah, so go quadruple XL with him.
I mean, maybe two sizes, yeah.
Yeah. This is because you want to buy him a gift, I imagine?
Well, it's a bit pricey. It's more like a, hey, heads up if you want to go to your dad's house and shake him, which, again, we don't endorse going to his dad's house and shaking him. But if he needs to go there to watch the Heat game and shake his dad, I'm looking up potential hazmat suits and maybe
shouldn't we put Poppy in a hazmat suit? What's the game plan here?
Poppy needs Poppy needs to be protected, not Dan.
Well, no, but if the comfort of his home, I feel like he shouldn't be inconvenienced, right? He's already getting shaked.
Remember the concept of wearing a mask. You wear a mask to protect others. So Dan absolutely be wearing the hazmat suit.
Billy is trying to find you a hazmat suit so you can go over to your dad's and shake him during the Heat game. Yeah.
Yeah.
Since you miss it so much.
Do you want a yellow, or do you want, do we get the reflectives just in case you cross the street and it's nighttime?
I think yellow is the most popular of the hazmat suits.
It's going to get real humid inside that for Dan. It's going to be an Andy Reid situation.
Maybe we could get you a snorkel, but then you'd be breathing out your germs.
Do me a favor.
Not gonna work
also,
out.
While you're shopping for these, get those like Arm & Hammer dehumidifiers. It's unbelievable science. I put this in my washing machine room. Guys, you put these little baking soda balls on the top, and then all of a sudden it just pulls in all the moisture in the air. It's crazy.
Hmm. Is Halloween happening?
No.
No, get out of here. What are you out of your mind?
It's in certain places it will be.
I drove by a Halloween store the other day, and they had signs that said, oh, we're hiring now. And then they had like the big signs like, oh, Halloween costume's in now. And I'm cute. I don't know if that's going
to
work out.
Yeah, I'm going to send my kids out to stick their hands in a bowl of candy. Are you crazy?
My daughter's three, though. This is a big Halloween year. Like, I need to like at least dress her up and just like walk her like to my house like 10
times. You know what you should do? You should dress her up and turn out all the lights in your house and then just have like little candy stops in the different rooms.
That's right.
And like, oh, Grace. And then she like knocks on the door and like, oh, happy Halloween, trick or treat.
You gotta do something.
Put a different mask on each way. She's a kid. She's not gonna remember anyways. Put a different mask on in every room and you're like, oh, look, it's you know, your neighbor, Phil or whatever.
At three, she might remember.
That's why we just got to at least get her dressed up, take a picture of her, and then that's it. Just tell
what
her
is your earliest memory? What not are the three. Earliest memories you have? Because
my,
I don't have
anything.
My
earliest memory is I actually have a memory of my dad, and my parents divorced when I was two. So I have a memory. I have a memory of sitting behind my dad's rocking chair as he was reading the paper, drinking from a coffee cup with an old Model T on it that said Michael.
Really?
Yeah. Look, it's a very vivid memory. Why
that's
would I?
Very
have
that? Sad. I mean. Sorry.
Yeah. So I know since they got divorced when I was two, I absolutely know that's got to be my earliest memory.
How about you guys? How early do you go? Because I do not have, I have a vague memory of looking out through a window in Long Island in Central Islip as my mother walked down a snowy street. I did not know where my mother was going or why it is that she was leaving. I was 31 years old.
Oh, okay, mine was 7:30 this morning.
I'm surprised you remember anything from the previous segment, given your just general meandering, which brings me to what I wanted to ask you and tell the audience. Very little around here is scripted. This is almost all ad lib. There isn't very much planning that goes into whatever it is that's happening during a segment. But I thought we should lead the national show with a variety of screaming and tremendo cojones. And I don't know how to do that as a show that's not scripted and with the Zoom stuff making things complicated as it regards our chemistry. I think the place to start the national show today is with one of those cafecito rants where we feel like everyone is snorting something, ecstasy, heroin, cocaine, where we're just shouting. But I don't know how to do it with the Zoom call because it's very difficult to establish chemistry this way. And if people are screaming over each other, sounds get blocked out.
Yeah, the Zoom prioritizes audio. So normally it just prioritizes Roy going, yay. And it's just like a bit of a downer.
No, it would have to be me, you, and Dan, and one guy on Zoom.
You have to essentially pick the most hyped one.
Right, Chris. Which is Chris.
Chris yes. is the best screamer.
Yeah. Chris yeah. is the best far. Screamer. Yeah.
Chris, do you want to practice it a little bit? Do you want to practice your enthusiasm? If people listen to this, local hour, Big Suey, in that order, and then national show, do you wish to practice at all? Do you want any part of what it is that I'm suggesting? Because this is also something that takes someone out of the show. If they start screaming and yelling for 3 or 4 minutes, they end up becoming exhausted.
Oh, we'll sit with you for days. You can't ruin your weekend. I mean, I've done it.
I mean, three or four minutes seems tough. You know me, I'm a team guy. You tell me to jump, I say how high. I do have some noise in the background here that could end up affecting it, but I feel like noise is good for that type
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah, noise is good, yeah.
Well, so do you think that perhaps we should leave you on an island and then support you just where it's just you on the Zoom for a second, and then we join you as...
Do we think, like, do we go, like, maybe a slow chant of Let's Go Heat, or more like...
Like, I think that, yeah.
But you faded out. The second half of what you did, the Zoom cut it out. I only heard... You were so loud that I only heard the initial roar. This makes all of this stuff complicated. I guess we'll find out together on how it is that we should do it. But I don't want the national show to suffer from a lack of enthusiasm just because we've been talking about this Heat game for 2 hours, because I'd like to, it's been so rare, Stugatz, you know this, we, Richie Incognito, we have not had many stories that locally have transcended nationally. We often have to force the Miami stuff into the national show just because, to get people's attention, because we want to celebrate Miami stuff.
When we first started, we had two stories. You had LeBron James coming here, you had the Big Three, so that was a local story that translated nationally. And then, as you just mentioned, we had the Bully Gate with Richie Incognito and Jonathan Martin. Chris just left the Zoom. I was going to ask him to scream again, because I'm concerned that when you scream too loud in the Zoom chat room, that you'll lose volume. Like the microphone could crack and you just don't. So I want to make sure we have this right before we go live.
It seemed to just happen.
What if Chris calls the studio and then you just bring him up on the phone and then that shouldn't crack, right? If you're just on the phone, he's able to get as loud as he wants.
Right.
That's funny. That's very pandemic. That's very 2020 to start the national show with Chris on a phone. How do you feel about that, Mike? Is that something that you think will work at all? Will it be a better audio connection to have Chris Cody
First of all, Mike feels like it's the worst idea we've ever come up with.
Well, I enjoy the idea. See, one of the things that the people can't see is that Chris is perpetually at home with his wife and daughter. So I don't know how any of this gets absorbed at home when he starts with his jiggling screaming.
I mean, who cares? He's working. Chris, we need you to roar one more time, like super loud. Back off the mic a little bit. We just want to see if your mic's going to shut off. It's going to crash. What's going to happen here? Just go ahead. Yeah, see?
Yeah, you got to bring it down a little bit.
You
got to
bring it down a little bit, right?
Yeah, you got to bring it down. It cuts
like my
off.
Volume?
It cuts off. Yeah, it cuts off. I don't know where the volume is, but let's
scale it back to like a 65. Let's
test this. Let's find out where the testing works. Right, let's see.
Too much.
Yeah,
too much.
You're gonna have to a little less. A little
short
less.
Burst. A little less. Go like ah.
Yeah. Start low and go.
I don't want to start the national show sounding like Chris is having sex. This is uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
That is good. That is good. That is good. Yes. Yes.
Look at that.
Yes.
Yes.
Darling.
We found it.
Darling.
Yes.
See. See, Poppy.
But you need to. You got to go longer than that, though. You need to last a little longer because.
No, too loud. Too loud.
Too loud.
The way. There you go.
There. My God, that was disturbing. Okay, we're ready to start now. Even though it sounds like Chris has finished.